Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gabaza, and for today, it is a Friday, which means we usually get into the hard economics, of any week. But right now, the biggest economic issue is the fact that South Africa is about to get into local government elections, to be specific. That will be happening on Monday. That will be on the 1st of November, and we've been seeing a lot of campaigning from the various political parties that are contesting out there in the various districts, provinces, municipalities, and all of that. So for today, we are going to be having a discussion around the importance of this election, particularly as it relates to the economy, because there is that big link that is there between politics and the economy, and trying to decipher why getting these elections right is important for the country going forward. And to help us to unpack these issues, we are joined by our two guests. We have a panel for today. We are joined by Dr. Sithembile Mbete, who is Program Director at the Apolitical Academy Southern Africa, together as being a senior lecturer with the Department of Political Science over at the University of Pretoria. And we're also joined by Natasha Marion, who is deputy editor at Financial Mail, just to get some insight into this. I think just as a baseline, I'm going to ask, both of them, starting with Dr. Mbete, your overall sense, because literally this is it, the rubber hits the road. Monday is around the corner. I think, just at the start of this year, local government elections were like, okay, that thing that's going to happen in November. But, we're now here. How have you been feeling about what you've been seeing on the ground, from the various parties and just the election process that we've seen so far? There's been a lot of campaigning, a lot of digital, a lot of traditional ways of campaigning that we've seen.
Thank you so much for having me. I think that the election campaign sort of season obviously started off quite slowly because of the uncertainty about whether the election would take place or not. But I think that once it was clear that the election was happening, many political parties were able to kick into gear. It took a little while to see the posters being put up and all of that kind of thing. But I do think that in many ways, parties were primed to start going by the contestation around whether the election would take place or not. So there was a lot of electioneering around the question of whether the election should be postponed and the court case around it. So they were already using that as an opportunity to make a particular point and to profile themselves. And then we saw, as soon as the election date of the 1st of November was proclaimed, that parties then started with online campaigns. And as soon as they were able to, with the level 2 lockdown restrictions and then going down to level 1, with in-person campaigning, with the door-to-door visits, with the big meetings and the big rallies, which we've seen intense certainly in the last 2 or 3 weeks, of course, raising questions about whether COVID, whether the coronavirus is giving us a break for elections. But nevertheless, so we've seen an interesting mix of traditional and innovative election campaign methods. One of the interesting innovative methods that I think parties have used is the Twitter spaces. Mm. Yeah. And we've seen that being used by the EFF and the ANC and some of the smaller parties, as well as to a lesser extent by the Democratic Alliance, also using Facebook as a platform to engage with the electorate. But it's interesting, I think, that within this last week, In the run-up to the election, we've seen parties really depend on the traditional forms of campaigning, the big meetings, the rallies, the door-to-door engagement, which I think indicates that South Africa is not yet at a stage of being a completely is not digitized and in a place for completely virtual campaigning.
It has been interesting because I think, you know, to your point about the way that people are using things like spaces, because earlier this year there was this big uproar around Clubhouse, you know, people just having these rooms and just having conversation. And then when Twitter then came out with spaces, and you now start seeing almost a lot happening. I've noticed the likes of Musi Maimane, etc. You know, you just get a pop-up, you know, such and such is now talking. And you're like, how did that person and this person, you know, link up? But I guess, you know, the power of those channels.
Just one point I want to make that I realize I should make also for a broader audience beyond South Africa. What I haven't seen is the use of WhatsApp. In as much as a platform for sharing campaign content or even disinformation, and I know that's been, you know, the use of WhatsApp to share misinformation or content against other parties has definitely been seen in the region and in the continent and other parts of the world, and we haven't seen that as much in South Africa, which could have been anticipated with the lockdown restriction.
It is an interesting one because there's so many things that parties have opened in the digital world, even memes, you know, and things like that. It seems like it's something for the kids, but if you craft your narrative, you know, carefully, you can make use of all of those different channels. Natasha, your take just around the way that I guess electioneering has evolved over time, and especially during this COVID period. I think Dr. Mbete was talking about the fact that the election wasn't even, the fact that we're having elections was not even a solid fact, you know, just a few months ago, but now we're here. So your thoughts just around how people have been campaigning and I guess making use of the fact that it's not business as usual as we saw a couple of years ago.
It's been an interesting journey covering this campaign this time around. You find it more difficult to get a sense of the feeling on the ground. You don't have access to those massive rallies. I think what most parties are missing is that contact in a stadium. You know, that drumming up their bases using big forums with music and excitement, and I think that energy that brings is missing from the campaign. But it has forced parties to be quite creative in the way they do things. Virtual rallies, we've seen so many of those happening over the last few days. The DA's last virtual rally, I think, is happening today or tomorrow. So we are seeing, innovative ways that they are trying to reach out to voters. I haven't seen many ad campaigns outside of the Democratic Alliance's television and radio campaigns. The DA has been quite aggressive about that. But I think for me, the ANC campaign seemed to have gone back a little bit to its old sort of roots, where it just campaigns on the ground. Doing a lot of door-to-door, a lot of community meetings. And I've also noticed that it hasn't been, except for this last week, in the suburbs much. So that was very interesting for me, given that in 2019, when President Ramaphosa ascended to the helm of the ANC and when he was the face of that campaign, it was heavily based in the suburbs among the middle class. And that, for me, it's interesting that It doesn't seem to have been that way this time around. I'm sure Dr. Mbete can shed some light as to why. I can't put my finger on it. I thought maybe the ANC needs to, you know, ensure that its base turns up, and that's probably why it's doing that. But I've noticed that, and it was quite interesting for me that the ANC has tended to be a little bit more distant from the suburbs this time around.
Perhaps as Dr. Mbete comes in to give that response, just, you know, 2 points is, firstly, you know, would you say that's a broadening of that, of the, maybe trying to appeal to a broader base, you know, to say that, you know, that year I focused on the suburbs, but this time I'm, you know, sort of, you know, going out there to say, you know, I'm not only this person who's here for the people in the suburbs, but I'm also, you know, out, you know, for everyone else. And then, you know, I guess the key question is, you know, why is it important to get this thing right?
Okay, so I'm going to, as I answer the question, I just wanted to respond to Natasha's question about the radio ads. I think one thing, and I think it's a function both of the how little time there's been for campaigning, but also financial constraints, is that I found this campaign season far more targeted. So like Action SA, for example, does have radio ads that I only hear on two radio stations. and because that's who they, it's a particular, it's, you know, Black middle class market that they're targeting. And so you will hear the ads at least once an hour. And so it's interesting, I think, and so getting back to the ANC point, how targeted the campaigning has been this year. And I'm not sure if we can read anything into that about this kind of future trends in our politics. It may just be a consequence of the context that we had in 2021 in terms of limited time and limited financing. I think that for the ANC, so since we started our local government system in 2000, and so with those first local government elections, the ANC support base turns out more for national and provincial elections than it turns out for local government elections. Mm. The reverse has been true with the DA and with other opposition parties, where the opposition party base turns out more at local government elections than at national and provincial elections. One of the reasons, or one of the interpretations for that that's been given, is that they feel that they have a greater chance of impact at local government than at a national election or on a national scale. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that let's remember that in 2019, a lot of the surveys and that were coming up both internally within the ANC, but also from external organizations, was that Cyril Ramaphosa was more popular than the ANC. And there was a lot that was going, that was being said around some quarters that you should vote for the ANC, it, particularly at national, to get Cyril into power, and then vote for an opposition party at provincial level. And so that emphasis on the suburbs, on kind of non-traditional ANC voters, was to stem the tide of losses that the ANC had experienced in 2016. Because in 2016, after the elections, local government elections, there was a possible trajectory for the ANC to fall below 50% in 2019. That was almost the logical next step. So to make sure that that wouldn't happen, you saw the party, you know, presenting Cyril Ramaphosa to a non-ANC voter base that would want to support him as an individual. In 2021, that's not a priority for the ANC. Firstly, because those people who would have voted for Cyril as a person in 2019 will want to vote for their usual party for the local government elections, because it's the usual, they perceive that their usual party is the one that's going to make sure that the lights stay on, that the road, that there are no potholes, and that the water stays on. But also, I think that the ANC needs to do a lot more work to get its base out to vote in this local government election, because of the very poor service delivery and conditions that many people are living in, and so needing to take the president to the people to say that, look, please give us another chance. And this has been particularly important in metro areas, where the ANC dropped significantly in 2016 and lost the complete control of, or lost majority control of the three metros in Gauteng and of Nelson Mandela Bay, and needing to go into coalition to try and govern those. So I think that it's a targeted approach to make sure that the base comes out, and to try and claw back electoral support in order to have a better chance of winning outright. Of course, we'll see whether or not that works.
No, definitely. And especially on the point, I want to hone in on the point of service delivery that you brought in just now, because when you think about service delivery, that is directly usually people view that as an economic issue, because the argument usually is I've paid tax. You know, so surely I should be getting XYZ services, you know, that are brought to me. So maybe you could give us a little bit, you know, of color. I want to start with, Natasha on this one, just around the importance of local government. And because there's some interesting things, especially what Dr. Mbete said about the fact that you have, you know, the ANC base coming out more on the national level, but opposition coming out more on the local government side. I guess the place or the importance of local government elections when it comes to actually getting the economy right, because, you know, as popular as, you know, Cyril was, one of the big things for on his ticket was always the economy.
Sure, Madiwa. Well, local government is really critical, is a really critical sphere of government. And what we've seen across the country is a very rapid and very dramatic decline in the quality of services provided by municipalities. This is borne out every year in the Auditor General's report, where we see how, you know, we see how money and how resources are being spent in municipalities and how they're not being spent on what they should be spent on. Irregular spending is increasing. The number of clean audits are getting less and less every year. We're seeing that being borne out in the actual experience, lived experiences of the people on the ground. We're seeing people without water for lengthy periods of time. There was a Northwest town that actually went to court to force the municipality to allow the community to actually take over the provision of water and and sanitation in that particular town. So we're seeing a dramatic decline in the provision of basic services across the country, and I think that's, for me, that has been playing out quite significantly in this election, especially given now, in particular, given that we're having, you know, these rolling blackouts ahead of the election. It's just bringing everything home quite starkly. And this, you know, a poor service delivery doesn't only have an impact on the ordinary man on the street, the you and I. It has an impact on big business. It has an impact on mines. It has an impact on every aspect of South African life. So if Cyril Ramaphosa, if the president wants to get the economy working, he's got to get the basics right, and the basics are at municipal level. And for me, that's why, you know, the ANC's message of give us a chance, give us a last chance, or give us a chance, we have made mistakes, is an interesting one, because it seems to, the ANC seems to almost be acknowledging that, you know, look, we know we've stuffed up local government, but give us a chance to make it right. Madhua, if that answers your question, for me, this election is very much about the basic services and getting it right. The DA's campaign has been, we get things done. But the lived experience of people in Tshwane is rather different. So, you know, all the parties have, while the DA's got a good track record in the Cape, its track record in governing Gauteng municipalities has not been great. So all the parties are a little bit on the back foot, I think, in that regard. But I do think it's a significant aspect of this election, more so than in 2016. I think the 2016 election was fought more on national issues than it was on the basic delivery, the day-to-day lived experience of ordinary South Africans, of their government at the coalface.
And if the, what's it called, on service delivery, if the conspiracy theorists are to be believed, then these rolling blackouts are just here to just highlight the problems that people are facing when it comes to, service delivery and all of that, you know, just before elections, if the conspiracy theorists are to be believed. Dr. Mbete, your take, especially when it comes to the importance of local government in getting the economy right?
Look, local government, as Natasha said, is critical for service delivery and the delivery of the services that are the foundation of business activity, right? So local government is really important in creating a conducive environment for business to operate. So having a functional roads system where the roads are fixed and are maintained and are expanded, having a steady water supply, steady electricity supply, having clean roads and a clean environment, all of that is the responsibility of local government. Local government is also responsible for the things that are about well-being, really, for people, right, and where they live. So recreational facilities, municipal clinics are also the responsibility of local government. So it is hugely important for creating a conducive environment for business. And we've seen in certain local municipalities, I think the most prominent recent example is in Lichtenburg, with Clover closing its cheese factory there because it could no longer operate its business because there was insufficient water supply, electricity supply, and the roads weren't usable. I think that what is a challenge for the local government system, and we see this most acutely with the local municipalities and the district municipalities, but we are increasingly seeing it with metros, is that the revenue models and the governance models that we have for local government aren't always fit for purpose. And so it's immensely difficult for local municipalities, for example, to raise revenue independently. They rely on national grants, and local government is a very small portion of the national budget relative to the kind of needs that there are at local level. So I do think that we do need to have a bigger conversation about whether our local government system is sustainable given the amount of responsibility that municipalities carry, both for creating a proper business environment, but also for the well-being, the everyday well-being of people.
Perhaps as a follow-up to what you've just said, when it comes to questioning the sustainability of, you know, the current local government structures, in certain communities, you see some of the slack, you know, being taken on by private sector players, for example, right? You've used the example of Clover, but in other places, Clover would have just said, you know what, we're just going to build our own road, we're going to do our own water plant, we're just going to make sure that this thing for our business, if it benefits the community, great, but our business, we're going to make sure that this infrastructure is in place, especially in mining towns and that type of thing, where they come in and they literally put everything, the hospitals, the schools, the roads and all of that. So, you know, I guess, you know, the question is more around, do you see things like that, you know, taking, I guess, greater prominence because there is this questioning of the current structures as they are?
Definitely. And I think that we've seen that, as you say, in the mining towns where you see corporations basically taking on the role of the municipality and providing services. I think that where it the businesses that suffer the most when local government is not functional are small and medium-sized businesses that don't have the resources to become a, you know, to provide water and to provide electricity on their own, and that require government infrastructure to be able to operate. And they're the ones that are the most affected, I think, when local municipalities don't do the work that they're supposed to do. I think Mpuleni in the Vaal is a classic case of that. So we do need to make local government work because not every business is the size of an Anglo-American and can provide its own water reticulation.
Yeah, that's very true. Not everyone, you know, has those resources. So as we are sort of rounding up this discussion, I wanted to touch on, because one would say that private sector, you know, coming in to pick up some of that, like doing their bit, is a form of, I think they call it a PPP, the public private partnerships that are there. It's a form of coalition. But in government, you know, the actual coalitions between the parties, right? You know, that seems to be quite a sensitive subject right now. And we've heard that in certain instances, the ANC coming out and saying, we're not going to have coalitions or anything like that. But it sort of seems inevitable, especially seeing what happened at the last, you know, round of elections. So where do you see that going? Natasha, I'll start with you there. Where do you see the coalitions going? And, you know, how does all of that then affect, that economic agenda?
Sure, Madira. I think, you know, I think we saw a lot of coalitions in 2016. I think we're going to see a lot more this time around. What's been really difficult for me, I'm not sure how Dr. Mbete feels about this, but what's been difficult for me is to trust any of the polling that's been coming out of the big parties. You know, this election's been so unpredictable and uncertain. Like Dr. Mbete said, we didn't even know whether we were going to have it. We didn't, you know, the court judgment only emerged quite late. It's in the middle of a pandemic. The pandemic has worsened the economic conditions and the lived experience of many South Africans. So I think the there are many variables that are quite unknown in this election. So I think internal party polling has been a little bit unreliable, given the number of variables that we've seen in unknown variables that we've seen in this ahead of this election, and I think there's going to be a lot more coalitions than what some parties are anticipating, and I think for at least the ANC's party recognizes that. This weekend, it's going to be having a meeting with its top leadership where it's going to be talking about basic sort of conditions or basic principles that's going to guide it in formulating coalitions. We've seen the reports about the Democratic Alliance indicating its willingness to go into a coalition with the ANC and not with the EFF, for instance. So I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see whether the ANC, Jesse Duarte in the briefing yesterday or the day before yesterday mentioned that the ANC will not go into bed with a party that's ideologically vastly different. Which is a bit weird for me because I always understood the ANC has been a broad church, but I don't know how that's going to actually play out when they're actually making decisions. But for me, it looks to me like we're going to have a scenario where parties are going to horse trade over whole municipalities potentially. And I think that's quite an exciting prospect, actually, if you have parties saying, well, we can give you control of this municipality if you give us control of that one by pooling their share of the vote. You know, my difficulty always is, where does that leave the voter? But I think we're going to see very different working arrangements this time around than we did in 2016. We also matured a little bit. 2016 was the year of the election of coalitions. And I think lots of lessons were learned, particularly by the small parties who felt very hard done by the DA, particularly in the Gauteng municipalities who treated them as sort of second-rate partners. So I think we're going to see a deepening of the coalition mood in the country. And I think we're going to see different types of coalitions, a maturing of that coalition space. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Look, it can bring about instability, and that can impact negatively on the economy. But, you know, I think it's about time that your parties are kept on their toes. And if a party doesn't get enough votes to be in complete control of the municipality, they're going to start, hopefully, jacking themselves up. And hopefully we're going to see that borne out in future elections. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, even though it is bound to bring about some instability as these coalitions start cementing themselves going forward.
Before we give Dr. Mbete the last word on this discussion, I wanted to just get a quick follow-up from you, because you mentioned earlier on, Natasha, that all the parties seem to be have gotten into this round of elections on the back foot, right? So with the current state of things, do you see the coalition as something that comes in, that eventually strengthens them from that point of view, or just continues to, I guess, reveal where the weaknesses are?
It depends, Madira. It's a good question, because in the Cape, the DA was strengthened by its coalitions. It first went into a coalition in the city of Cape Town in 2006, and it just got stronger and stronger since then. I think if I'm correct in the date. And then eventually to take over governing the province. But in Gauteng, the experience is vastly different. It took over the city of Joburg and lost it before its term was up. It had four mayors in the city of Tshwane. It's sitting on its fourth mayor right now. So for me, that's an indication of, that's a reversal of a voter wouldn't look positively on that for me. So it really depends on how those coalitions are managed, and the kind of cooperation and that they have in those kinds of agreements. We saw the DA having a cooperation agreement with the EFF in the last election, and we know that that's not going to happen this time around. It depends on how the partners actually manage those partnerships and those agreements that they actually enter into.
Okay, cool. So, Dr. Mbete, your take as a final word on this discussion, as we round up around coalition, their place, where it's going to take the country going forward.
What I want to just make the point that I think we often miss is that coalition governments are the logical end of our electoral system. Proportional representation electoral systems, like the one that we have at national and provincial level, which is a pure system, the one that we have at local government level is a mixed system. They are designed to lead to coalition governments. Mm. It's one of the consequences of a proportional representation electoral system, because it's meant to enable the greatest participation of the most amount of people and the most amount of political views in the governance of a particular place. In South Africa, the situation that we have had with the ANC's electoral dominance at all levels of government and the DA's electoral dominance in the Western Cape and in Cape Town and for a certain period of time, the IFP's electoral dominance in KwaZulu-Natal was an anomaly. It was an exception to the rule. It wasn't the rule. And now what we have seen in the past few years, we saw it in 2016, and we're going to continue seeing it now, is that our political system, our political party system, is beginning to look like what a political party system usually looks like under a proportional representation electoral system. So the when we speak about coalition governments, it's not a matter of are they desirable or are they undesirable. I mean, we can have that conversation, but the reality is that they are the consequence of the electoral system that we have. And so if the electoral system that we have is going to yield coalition governments, then we need to work out how do we make those coalition governments function so that our municipalities can be governed. So the point I'm making is that the coalition governments aren't actually the option, aren't actually not an option, right? Because the reality is that within our metro municipalities in particular, and also in some local municipalities, there isn't a single party that has a majority of support amongst the electorate. If there is not a single party with a majority of support among the electorate, then our electoral system says that all parties that have enough support to get into the council must be represented in the council, and then they must form a coalition. Mm. And that the council will be governed by a coalition. It's the reality of our electoral system and of our society. And so in a situation where you don't have a single party that represents everyone, then all the parties need to figure out how to govern in coalition. And that requires behavioral change and a mindset change in our politicians and our now political parties, because they now need to think of governance not as a zero-sum game or as a winner-takes-all. They need to start thinking of governance as being about compromise and being about negotiation and being about prioritizing. So if you as a political party, if you are the EFF and your biggest priority is land, then you need to, make the point that, okay, you'll get into a coalition if you can push your land agenda, but then you mustn't really care, or you, not that you mustn't care about it, but you can't then be as tied up about how electricity is managed or how water is managed, because if you want to be in a coalition and if you want your coalition to succeed, it's hugely complex, and I think that it takes a few iterations to get it right. So I don't think that we're going to get coalitions right in 2021, even though we are going to have coalition governments in many places in 2021. But, you know, we need to get used to it and we need to accept it, because that is how our electoral system is designed. If we don't want coalition governments, then we need to design a different electoral system.
So that's been it. It's been an interesting discussion just around local government elections, which are set to take place on Monday. That will be the 1st of November 2021. We were talking about, how different elections are now because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the fact that there was so much uncertainty going into it. But at the same time, the turning to digital channels that's being employed by some of the parties, yet at the same time, some of the parties looking to more traditional means to actually appeal to their bases. One of the big things that we, touched on is the importance of local government elections within the context of an economy that is trying to grow and recover, try to claw back the losses that were seen over the COVID-19 period. And I think one of the key ones is to say that service delivery, which affects us all, also affects businesses, which in turn affect, you know, people's livelihoods. So as with any economy, there is that cyclical nature to everything else. Ending off talking about the fact that we're likely going to be having, you know, more and more coalitions. You know, we have Natasha Marion, deputy editor at the Financial Mail, saying that we're likely going to see more coalitions coming up. But at the same time, those things, it would depend, you know, how things are executed, whether or not they will bring out the party's strengths or weaknesses. And then ending off with Dr. Stembile Mbete, who is a senior lecturer at the Department of Political Sciences at the University of Pretoria, as well as program director at the Apolitical Academy of South Africa, saying that our political system naturally will lead us to a situation where we have coalition politics. The key thing is how to get those coalition politics right. It might not happen with this election cycle, but it will require iterations over time. So that's been it. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Madiwa.
This is Madiwa's Take.
The issue of service delivery is something that people have been battling with for, you know, many years in South Africa, whether we're talking roads, whether we're talking schools, hospitals, that type of thing. It's always been an issue, particularly in some communities, you know, that have gotten the short end of the stick, whether it's budgetary constraints. But I think most of the time what hurts people is the fact that there's so much corruption. I think Natasha mentioned the fact that there's been more and more irregular spending. That's what they call it, because the Auditor General, you know, is doing this on a yearly basis. And, you know, those are the things that hurt people to say that, you know, we're paying taxes and, you know, money is meant to be going towards certain projects, but it's not. And for a country that's trying to grow its economy, you know, just giving the basics like that is a key. And especially for businesses, that point that Dr. Mbete raised about Clover having to close down one of its facilities because you don't have, you know, adequate water, you have problems with roads, that type of thing. So broadening that service delivery debate and conversation towards the side of businesses. Hopefully things like that can give, you know, even greater credence, because you've got consumers, you know, the citizenry on one side, but also businesses. And if there is a demand, you know, on all sides for increased and better service delivery, then surely, you know, that's something that we can hold leaders to account on. And then, you know, just talking about the fact that service delivery, you know, is likely to hurt more the small businesses that don't have the resources to be able to absorb some of those shortfalls from the government. So if we're saying that we're serious about small businesses being an engine of growth and an employer in the country, then fixing issues of service delivery will be key. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.